Hello everyone and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report. Today being Monday, of course, we are obligated and will deliver a fantastic experience for you, courtesy of a little bit me, but mostly Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going?
Wow, yes. Ooh, setting the bar real high. Hello everyone. Happy Monday. I've never said that on this show. And
first time
I
for hate everything.
That I just did. Because
yes,
it's the worst thing that anyone can say on a Monday.
Well, I don't know. It's like it's approaching like making a reference to a case of the Mondays. It's getting into that sort of workplace thing. Anyway, so look, last week, if anybody's watching, two Mondays ago, Francesca had some internet issues. Last Monday, if I recall correctly, the show was weird. Maybe it was a Friday. It's usually Fridays when that happens. This one is going to be because I got my vaccine yesterday and I'm not gonna lie to you, I feel a little weird. I don't know if it's that or what, but I do feel a little bit weird. I'm having a little bit of trouble speaking. So apologies in advance. I'm gonna do what I can to produce an hour.
Yeah, no, it's your body is uploading Windows XP. It's going through every version of Bill Gates's Windows. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is slowly monopolizing the rest of your organs. There's gonna be a whole antitrust situation in your body pretty soon.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's like trying and failing to connect to Bluetooth, like all the devices around here. Like I don't need the AirPods right now. Like I'm good. Anyway, but yeah, so apologies in advance. I'll do what I can, but I feel a bit weird. And it made me sleepy, so I drank quite a bit of caffeine, which you know that produces a good camera ready John. Anyway, so that's out there. But anyway, thank you for joining us regardless of what ends up happening on this show. Oh no, wait, it was Friday. It was when I had to do the Prince, was it Prince Charles? Prince
Philip.
Charles?
Philip, Prince Philip. You idiot.
Yeah, that was a rough eulogy. So anyway, now I have a better excuse. Pretend I got my first dose on Friday. Anyway, thank you for being here. Most of you have probably left, but those of you who are still here, thank you for being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream so that people know that we're live. We've got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. Starting off with Dante Wright, obviously the big story coming out of Sunday. We've got a few updates on Matt Gaetz. Big updates on vaccination efforts. I'm gonna talk a little bit more about the process of getting mine. And Trump gets an award. That's gonna be fun. And yeah, so we got a lot that we're gonna get to. Oh, and also we're gonna have our top 10 list. So every week for our tier 2 and tier 3 members on YouTube, Francesca and I do a top 10 list, sometimes political, sometimes not. This one is gonna be, it is the top 10 things that, come on Biden, what the hell? Like things that he should have already done that like 100 days in he hasn't. And this was inspired by, and I'm obligated on every Monday show to make reference to John Oliver's program.
Sure.
He did an awesome segment on refugee resettlement. And so that inspired me to start to think back on some of the things that Biden really should have gotten to by now. These are not things where like all of the Democrats should have done it. That's too high of a bar and they'll never reach it. I'm just saying Biden could have done this stuff.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have that list for you. Should be fun. Anyway, with that, Francesca. I am too, always. You ready to do this thing?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's do it. Because America is absolutely the worst, we couldn't even get through a high profile case like Derek Chauvin's without having an incredibly similar and some recurring thematic ways issue. And in fact, very close by. And here I'm referencing the big tragic story coming out of this weekend. That is that police shot and killed a black man on Sunday during a stop for a traffic violation. Part of the story we're gonna return to. Sparking protests and unrest in a suburb just miles away from where George Floyd was killed during an arrest in Minneapolis last May. This is Brooklyn Center. The man killed by police was identified by relatives and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as Dante Wright, a 20-year-old. And you can see him here in this picture. Just want to get that out there because God only knows what pictures Fox is gonna be running with later on today. So sure. That's what he actually looks like. Absolutely tragic during a traffic violation, which we're gonna give you more details on. Totally needless. The fact that it's so close there, just look, let's give you the details on what apparently happened. Brooklyn Center police said in a statement that officers had stopped the motorist shortly before 2 p.m. Sunday. After determining the driver had an outstanding warrant, police tried to arrest the driver. The driver re-entered the vehicle and an officer fired at the vehicle again. During a traffic stop, fired his gun, which he put into his hand, For some reason, during a traffic stop, he drew his firearm and began discharging it into a vehicle because it was so high stakes, obviously. You had to risk killing this person during the traffic violation, because if they'd gotten away, that would have been a tragedy, not murder. Murder is not the tragedy from the point of view of most cops. It's, I got to get back in my car and follow someone if they leave. And we have no idea if he was going to. But let's say he had, they would have had to have followed him. And that can't be abided. And so let's kill him. Let's just kill him so we don't have to follow him. Anyway, they obviously struck him, killed him. And by the way, many of the stories use the incredibly police friendly, they fired their weapon, striking him and then he died language. They killed him. Okay, I don't know, I don't want to be an Ernest Hemingway about this, but I feel like we can condense those sentences, turn the passive into an active. They killed him. That's what they tried to do when they fired his gun and they were successful. So since that was their goal and they nailed it, let's give them credit for the murder that they committed and not sort of just pretend, I don't know, bullets go places and sometimes people die. Who's to say what causality is in this circumstance? Anyway, we have more information. I apologize that I've gone on for a very long time. Francesca, what are your thoughts so far about this case?
No, I think it's important to get the context. And sadly, it mirrors so many cases. And this is why there are calls to defund the police. Because at what point has the police proven time and time again, if someone constantly and consistently fails at doing their job, fails at de-escalating a situation, at what point do you say, okay, well, we're gonna actually not give you all the money that you need or that you are wanting because you can't do your job, right? We need to actually move this money out of that. You cannot be responsible for policing the streets. You are not responsible for keeping us safe. And matter of fact, maybe take away your gun. I'm serious about this. What would happen? Let's just try it. Let's try it for a week. Oh, you can still have a taser. You can still have a rubber bullet gun, which you have unloaded on unarmed demonstrators for, you know, including in this case. But yep. It is just how many times do we need to be proven that the police have failed at their jobs, that they need to be radically reformed and remade. And how many more people have to die? How many more families? He's pictured there with his son, yeah, a 1-year-old. How many more families are going to be destroyed by this? So it is fitting that it's happening in Minnesota because it proves that the police in Minnesota haven't learned. They haven't, or in Minneapolis, are we in Minneapolis?
This is Brooklyn Center, but you know, it's not far, obviously.
Right. It proves that basically, despite George Floyd being murdered, that and despite the massive outcry and despite the Derek Chauvin trial, police haven't learned. They still haven't learned. And my question is, like, to you, John, to everybody, when will police be afraid? When are they going to be afraid to use lethal force? When are they going to be afraid of the consequences? And look, maybe Derek Chauvin gets off real easy. Maybe he gets the years that he probably deserves, that he definitely deserves, but it's systemic. It is bigger than this trial. It is about making sure that, I mean, this is gonna be, if he is convicted, one in so many cases where the police officer got off.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, look, obviously, when you talk about the prospect of convicting a cop, if they did it, then it's justice for them to go away. But I think that also, whether it's made explicit or not, it's the idea that that should affect other cops and maybe change their behavior. But I don't know, will it? Like, I have naive expectations sometimes for people's ability to learn from what's going on in the country, probably because I'm in a bubble of paying too much attention to the news. But like, when there's like a rash of Karens, I'm kind of surprised when someone does something super Karenish. Like, wait, but didn't we just go through all this? Didn't you see how awful this was? And in the same way, you know, after the killing of Floyd, you would think every cop has got to be thinking about this now. And that's obviously unrealistic. But how about like if it was a couple of miles away? How about if you're a cop from that exact area and the trial's going on right now? Maybe you at least could be thinking about it, but no, apparently not. They're still just as ready to pull their gun at the drop of any plausible explanation for why they at that point has to kill someone.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*****ed. the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Now, as more and more information is coming out about the killing of Dante Wright, we have more details from Mr. Wright's mother, Katie Wright, who told reporters that her son had been driving a car that his family had just given him 2 weeks ago, and that he'd called her as he was being pulled over. She said, quote, "He said they pulled him over because he had air fresheners hanging from his rearview mirror." Ms. Wright added that her son had been driving with his girlfriend when he was shot. The police said a woman in the car had been hurt in the crash, but that her injuries were not life-threatening. Oh, but let's also add, you know what is life-threatening? Firing into a vehicle that she's in. That actually is quite life-threatening, but again, very passive. The crash, not the crash we caused by shooting the driver, that's not the thing, and not us shooting at her potentially. Anyway, Ms. Wright said that when her son had called her, she'd urged him to give his phone to a police officer so she could give the insurance information, quote, "Then I heard the police officer come to the window and say, put the phone down and get out of the car. She said her son had dropped the phone or put it down, after which she heard scuffling and an officer telling Mr. Wright not to run. Then she said someone hung up the phone. When she called back, her son's girlfriend answered and told her that he had been shot." So again, the cop is ready to lose it at the prospect that he might run, because if he runs, you might have to chase him, and then you might not get him. You know what you do have, though? His car and a person who knows him. Again, what is the worst case scenario?
That he gets away. That he gets away for air fresheners, you guys. Like this, your life is not in danger, but you know that that's what his lawyers, that's what the Federal Order of Police, the police unions, that's what they're going to claim time and time again. But in no way is not providing insurance or having air fresheners on your rearview mirror, in no way does that pose any danger. In no way. And that's the other thing, is that again, it is not about the stop. Like John said, I mean, you think about the amount of Karen videos, and I don't know, when you said that, it reminded me of the fact that, like, if Karens were black, they wouldn't be alive. Because because it is, you can't freak out when you're a person of color. You can't have a public freak out. You can't have a mental health crisis, because you will be criminalized and you will be like cut down by people who are quote unquote afraid for their lives. I mean, it's, and once again, I mean, this reminds me of I'm gonna forget his name. Is it Alton Sterling, who was killed in front of his girlfriend as well, and his child, who was in the car, and she had to remain calm. You have to remain calm, even though the police have just murdered your loved one, because you don't want to get murdered by them.
Exactly. Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that, totally, you can't freak out, you can't have a mental health issue, you can't have anything. But also, and this is to preempt the, well, just do what the cops say. Yeah, but also a lot of the times when you do exactly what the cops say, you still get killed. So let's also add that. Not having any issue does not mean there's not gonna be an issue, because very often there's an issue even though there's no reason. I'm also seeing now breaking news that the cop accidentally pulled his gun instead of his taser. Okay. I'm not a cop. I don't carry a gun and I don't carry a taser. I have a feeling they're different enough that you can tell the difference by touching them, by knowing where on your body they are. I feel like that is not too high of an expectation. And here's the thing, if you can't tell the difference, then you probably shouldn't have either of them. If you just start grabbing for anything because a person might drive away, you are not the sort of person that needs to have something capable of killing people. Like, absolutely, you clearly are not responsible enough for that. And I think the fact that that's a thing that can happen, that it's just, I don't know, maybe I grab my phone, maybe I grab a flamethrower. Let's find out today. Then no cop should have it probably until we figure out a way for them to be trained to know if what they're about to do is going to kill a person or not.
No,
and it shouldn't be up to the roll of the dice.
No, and then the other thing is tasers are shaped exactly like guns. This is the other brilliant thing in policing is that tasers are shaped like guns.
Sure. Are they the same weight? Do you hold them in the same place in your body? Is the safety the same? There's no way you cannot know that you're not putting the safety off of a pistol.
But this isn't the only instance. Supposedly, the officer who killed Oscar Grant in Oakland, execution style, also claims that he was reaching for his taser, whether or not that is true. The point is, you're a poor cop then. You've been trained poorly. And why are tasers shaped exactly like guns? And hey, why do you even have a gun in the first place? Should you be able to use this kind of lethal force anyway, considering you're trying to kill people or so bad at your job, you don't know which one is your taser and which one is your gun? The other thing to know, people have been killed for having tasers. There was a case in San Francisco where a young man was killed. He had a taser on him. He was a security guard. He was killed by police because they thought he had a gun. There's a big problem here. There's a pretty big problem. And also, tasers, let's be real, people have died from being tased. We're not saying that's a solution, but man, it's better than immediate lethal force.
Exactly. And by the way, we're responding to breaking news. It might be different tomorrow. I don't know. So just bear that in mind. We're responding as literally as popping up right now. Following the killing of Dante Wright, the state mobilized the National Guard after crowds gathered in front of the Brooklyn Center Police Department on Sunday evening, and a curfew was ordered through Monday morning. I believe we have some footage that we can put up as we're discussing this. But outside of the Brooklyn Center Police Department on Sunday night, smoke billowed into the air as a line of police officers fired rubber bullets and chemical agents at protesters, some of whom lobbed rocks, bags of garbage, and water bottles at the police. At around 11:30 last night, Brooklyn Center Police declared the crowd an unlawful assembly and said anyone who remained at the scene, including journalists, would be arrested. Because it's America, and you can do that apparently because the crowd is inconvenient. Anyway, so I am assuming that there's probably a similar situation there right now. We'll find out more as the day goes on. I would assume that, barring some sort of far quicker than normal response to this from the police department, a far quicker than normal response that's actually serious and takes into account all that we've been discussing here so far today, it is likely that that same sort of protest will continue to manifest there. Again, especially considering the context of where this particular police killing happened.
Absolutely. And once again, the response proves the point of the protesters, the violence, the rubber bullets, the tear gas, these non-lethal weapons that do this cruel thing of proving that both cops are armed to the teeth with things that don't actually kill people, but maim and stall people. And also that they are willing to use violence when faced with non-violence, whenever possible, really. It's almost like they have too much money.
It's almost like it, but don't know. No, because you're getting closer to defunding. It's just, this is the narratives, the conversation. No, it's so bad, Francesca, that not only should we not do that, we shouldn't do anything, in fact. It's, it could like endanger an incumbent in 6 years or something. We should just let the killings continue. That is unfortunately a parody I am doing of virtually every Democrat.
Absolutely.
Not all of them. There are some good ones, but more than there should be. So look, we've been giving updates as they've been coming. It is possible we're missing things. That's, you know, sort of one of the costs of doing a show like this live. I apologize. But we will be sticking with the story. I'm sure we'll have more on tomorrow's episode of the Damage Report. And you can expect that Anna and Cenk will be talking about it on the Young Turks as well. I would guarantee that. Matt Gaetz is declaring sort of victory during this whole thing, pitching himself as a better fighter than ever because of all the stuff about the underage sex trafficking and all that. He tweeted, "I may be a canceled man in some corners. I may even be a wanted man by the deep state." Because you gotta add some conspiracy theories. "But I hear the millions of Americans who feel forgotten, canceled, ignored, marginalized, and targeted." Yeah, millions of Americans have been canceled for sex trafficking. That's a thing that's happened. "I draw confidence knowing that the silent majority is growing louder every day." But here's a suggestion. If this majority that you speak of has an issue, it's not that they're too quiet. It's that they don't vote enough, dude. That's why you lose elections, you dunce. Anyway, he's canceled in some corners. Great follow-up question from Cody Johnston, who says, "Canceled for what, Matt?" Yeah, he left that part out. What was it? I remember something about like Venmo or tuition or young girls. What was it again? Anyway, so Francesca, of course, they've got to be like, "I'm fighting more than ever, right up until the minute I'm forced to resign."
I love how he's like canceled in some corners. Like, what corners is he uncanceled in? You know, like the Mar-a-Lago. Corners of state penitentiaries and Mar-a-Lago and
Epstein's Island,
totally uncanceled. Mm-hmm. Probably Never Neverland, wherever Michael Jackson had that little circus. There's a lot of places he is not canceled in. But there's another thing that he's doing here, which is like saying that he's a wanted man by the deep state, which is a little bit of a hat tip to Q people, totally. Which is like, here's the thing about Q people. Aren't they supposed to not like pedophiles or believe that Democrats are secretly pedophiles and they're ordering kids off of, I don't know, Domino's menus? Like the whole, like, isn't that where we're going? But no.
Oh God, wait until you find out what a stuffed crust is.
John.
I apologize.
Very good though. Very
good. I didn't say anything. No, you're 100% right. But to be fair, devil's advocate, the QAnoners think that he has been falsely accused of pedophilia, which is their thing. It's not fair for the deep state to be doing it. They're supposed to be asserting that evidence that people are pedophiles.
Sure. Even though apparently Q is some sort of like deep state military intelligence apparatus, i.e. a dude who lives in Japan and runs 8chan. But yeah, no, it's ridiculous that like, he's got to drum up this support. And then it's like, I don't know, like who's growing more confident? Like 38-year-olds who want to date 17-year-olds, they're everywhere, actually. They're everywhere. They're men who can't date women their own age. That's what they are. Doesn't make you cool. Makes you a big old loser and potentially wanted for sex trafficking. And so, yeah, just loser-ish, loser. Just, yeah. I mean, I like, you look at Matt Gaetz and you're like, damn, dude. I can't say the words that I want to, but I'm just like,
not allowed to.
You're just posing with 17-year-old girls, like, cool, man. You're cool. Okay.
He's trying to keep a Florida version of a stiff upper lip to reassure his base that he's a fighter, which leads to like Twitter accounts like this. Matt Gaetz, Florida man, fiance for now, firebrand, America first. Firebrand? Is there any more shallow, substance-free designation than firebrand? What does that even mean?
Anyone who self-proclaims themselves, I mean, fuck.
Oh God, he called himself a firebrand. Oh God, what if it just said, Matt Gaetz, Florida man, fiance, please call me T-Bone, America first. Like, no, you don't call yourself a firebrand, you idiot. Also, he tweeted out a One America News article. Representative Matt Gaetz vows to fight for America amid ethics probe. Ooh, you love to see some hard-hitting journalism. Not even pretending. So Matt Gaetz has been set adrift for the most part from most of the Republican Party. Sure, he's got Marjorie Greene and he's got Jim Jordan. So he's got the sex scandal wing of the Republican Party locked down. But one notable exception is that Trump really hasn't had the time of day for him. He put out one like 7-word presidential statement saying, Matt Gaetz has denied the allegations, bye. And that was pretty much it. Now, over the weekend, Matt Gaetz did go down to Trump land. And he gave a speech at the Women for Trump event or whatever.
Oh,
but apparently
no.
that that wasn't the main reason he went down there. According to CNN Politics, Representative Matt Gaetz, who is facing a federal investigation into sex trafficking allegations, was recently denied a meeting with Donald Trump at his Mar-a-Lago estate as the ex-president and his allies continue to distance themselves from the Florida congressman. Two different people familiar with the matter say Gaetz tried to schedule a visit with Trump after it was first revealed that he was being investigated, but the request was rejected by aides close to the former president, who've urged him not to stick his neck out to defend Gaetz. Now, one of the representatives for Gaetz, Harlan Hill, a guy who was fired from Fox for calling Kamala Harris a bitch, he's the like PR rep, a guy who can't get on Fox because he's too toxic. He said Representative Gaetz was welcomed to Trump Doral this week and has not sought to meet with President Trump himself. He says that Gaetz has been mostly relaxing with his fiance this week during recess. You gotta. So he's like, we know he's spending his time. We have to assure you, he's totally still cool with his fiance, and the vibe can best be described as relaxed. Relaxed. Yeah. That's the vibe with his fiance right now. Okay.
Just okay. Super relaxed, driving around a golf cart outside of Trump's office, going like, hey buddy, I'm here. Just relaxing with my fiance.
Shut up.
She loves me though. Anyway, beep, if you wanna, I'll be by the pool. I got a virgin Bloody Mary for you, buddy.
Got a six pack of Diet Cokes. They got your name on it. Yeah. Well,
anyway,
another statement was put out by a representative for Trump saying Gaetz did not request a meeting, quote, and therefore it could never have been denied. Okay, so look, I want to explain PR and speaking to these people, because the Harlan Hill one was bad, but this is worse. So Miller's statement is supposed to send the signal that no, they're totally cool or whatever. But like Gaetz, we know that Gaetz and Trump talk on the phone. Like that's what they do. They're very close. You saying that Gaetz has never requested a meeting, thus it couldn't be denied. That is the coldest, I almost swore, the coldest stuff I can imagine right there. So Gaetz, totally cool with Trump, knows in your depiction, he knows not to even try to talk to Trump. And Trump obviously hasn't tried to talk to Gaetz. You're saying what we're saying. They're not talking. That's what you just demonstrated. He's the biggest ally to Trump imaginable, more than Barr, you know, the guy who started the investigation into Gaetz.
Yes.
So
yes.
You're just confirming it. And by the way, so he was at that pro-Trump thing. Aide saw this last minute speech as the attempt for him to just like be around, basically like Francesca was just pantomiming. It's like, you know, if you're just in the area or whatever. So pathetic.
Defend
but that's what
me,
he's
please.
Got. That's what he's got.
Here's what I'm going to say. John, I think it's been weeks and you and I haven't talked about Matt Gaetz, surprisingly.
Sure.
Very sad that I haven't been on when you're talking about him. But you know, I guess the week that all of this broke, he was maybe talking to Newsmax about potentially getting a job, you
yes.
know, and he was, you know, potentially like moving on to, yes, the grift of right-wing media. And I think that's been closed off at this point. I'm willing to be proven wrong, of course. I don't believe these like companies actually have any morals, but I think that the only place, if you truly think about the only place that like a predator can still get a job is in the United States Congress. That's yeah. really it. It's elected.
OAN won't hire him.
No, they're not going to touch him. It is being elected to Congress in the beautiful state of Florida, where I guess many people already want to lower the age of consent and are like, whatever. Yes, I always use Cash App to pay for my sex workers. Like, look, bless you if you're from Florida, but also kind of the worst state. And look, but the voters in Florida are going to consistently send Matt Gaetz back to office because he's going to consistently tell them he's being canceled. You know, that it's a conspiracy, blah, 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 deep state. So it's kind of the perfect place to hide.
Yeah. If you could pick a state, he's going to be safe there. And it's important to note that like all these updates look, today's updates look pathetic. Friday's updates about the Venmo was obviously looks really damning. That doesn't mean he's going away.
No.
Marjorie Greene was like, Nancy Pelosi getting shot in the head, thumbs up for that. And she's still a congresswoman. It is entirely possible that he will survive that, survive this. But, you know, along the way, we can have a little bit of fun. That's maybe the best that we can hope for. America is the worst. Republican voters, and we talked about on the pre-show, Josh Hawley, like last election cycle, the first 3 months he raised, I think it was $47,000. The first 3 months of this election cycle, where he notably tried to overthrow the US government, he raised $3 million. Marjorie Greene raised $3 million. She isn't even in committee. She can't even do the work, but they love this stuff. Matt Gaetz, for all we know, might be raising more money than ever before in his life, specifically because of the sex trafficking.
Yep.
Think about how many Wayfair cabinets he can afford with the money he's bringing in. Anyway,
John,
he can afford double stuffed crust. Anyway, it hasn't been defined, so I can't get in that much trouble. Okay.
Why so is John that, John's worse than me. Now I'm the one that's blushing.
I'm trying. It's a flipping. I get the vaccine. My new superpower is doing to you what you do to me. Got a few good bits of news on the pandemic and vaccination. The most important by far, and you've probably seen this reported all over the country. I got the vaccine. And that's the most important thing. Also, one of our producers is going to be getting the vaccine later on today. I believe Franny is going to be getting it soon. I hear Anna's going to be getting it soon. How awesome that so many people in so many states increasingly have access to it. Unfortunately, many don't want to get it, but it's great for those of us who want it. So Francesca, I know you're close to it. Are you excited?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited as hell. I want to leave the house. I want to see people. I realize I don't need liquor every day when I can see a friend, which is interesting. And so, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing people. I think at this point, though, you know, it's like we know that there aren't really very many side effects other than feeling crappy. And we would have known by now. We probably would have known by now. And yes, we don't know beyond like 6 months or something. Maybe in like, you know, month 12, we all turn into zombies. Or like this is how the X-Men starts, in which case I claim Rogue and that's cool.
That's a pretty good one. I'll be Jubilee. Oh, it sparkles. Anyway, and yeah, the side effects of feeling crappy, like sure, some people get bad side effects. My wife had really bad arm pain from Moderna. Right now, I feel a little bit weird and probably everyone can tell. But I want to put it in perspective how bad I feel. It's only so bad that I'm not even sure if it's that I got the shot yesterday or that last night I drank champagne and ate a bunch of Americone Dream ice cream. It could be either, honestly. I'm not sure. That's how I feel. A little bit hungover and a little bit like I had too much ice cream. You know, maybe it's the vaccine. Maybe it's the Ben and Jerry's. I don't know.
How much did you pay for the champagne?
It was actually a gift for our move. So nothing, actually.
Okay, so then it's, well, I'm gonna say bad champagne is the worst hangover.
That will give you a bad hangover, that is true. Now, almost as important vaccine news is that as reported by Cyrus Chapar, on Saturday, America administered 4.63 million doses in one day. That is amazing. Not too long ago, it was 1 million a day average. That is huge. More than 500,000 doses higher than the previous record of the previous Saturday. And that means that as of Friday, and obviously we now have like 8 million more people since these numbers, more than 112 million people across the US, or a little bit more than one third of the population, have received at least one vaccine dose. And as of Sunday, at least 22% of the country's population had been fully vaccinated. So about 1 in 5 Americans are totally done with this thing, and about one third have received at least one dose. That is good. Even better, though, is that more than 78% of people aged 65 and over have received at least one dose of the vaccine, and 60% have been fully vaccinated. That is obviously the main reason that the death numbers are dropping as much as they have, and that as cases go up, which we'll get to, the deaths haven't been shooting back up like they have in past spikes. It's because we've done a very good job of vaccinating the elderly.
Yeah. This is like some golden years, that sci-fi movie Cocoon. They are loving it. This is like a renaissance. Older people are, they're just, they're loving life, going out, mm-hmm. partying. And I say good for them.
Yeah.
Screw young people. Right. Young people have had their own run. They've been spreading the virus. Now it's the old's turn. The old.
And I love that they're doing it. And I get it. Like, they're obviously really scared, but almost 8 in 10 have received at least one dose. That is like, Werther's original level acceptance by the elderly in America. That they're like, no, I like it. I do that to me.
Yeah, yeah. That and BBC dramas. It's that and BBC dramas is just
exactly.
I love it.
Just love watching Downton Abbey and sucking on a hard candy. Anyway. Other good news, fewer than 1 in 28,000 people who've gotten a vaccine, or less than 0.004% have reported severe, serious adverse reactions. And by the way, the vast majority who do, and it is rare, do so in the first 30 minutes, generally when they are still being watched at the site where they can be tended to if they have it. But again, 1 in 28,000 is a very low chance of adverse reactions. So that is good news. On the other hand, the US has averaged more than 68,000 new COVID-19 cases every day over the past week. That is about 20% higher than it was the previous week. So cases are still high. In some states, hospitalizations have begun to go up, which is very worrying considering the vaccination. Deaths seem like they're pretty consistent. So again, that race continues, but we're getting more and more good information. And vaccination is opening up to more and more people. The fact that California is a huge populous state now, if you're generally old enough that you'd be watching this show, you can probably schedule and go get it in the next few days. That is very good news.
Yeah, no, it's huge. And it is scary though to think about 68,000 cases, right? And I am curious more specifically about where those cases are coming from. And again, you know, a lot of the initial cases were about workplaces and workplace safety. And a lot of folks who are not able to work from home, which, you know, people are should and are still doing if possible. So there's, as we move out of this, John, there's just gonna be so many questions about, you know, who is being protected. I mean, the same folks who have been exposed to the virus, essential workers, they're gonna continue to be the ones who are exposed and, you know, fall ill with the virus as well. How are they being protected? And how can we prevent, yes, the next virus, the next pandemic? It's going to be a thing. So good on Biden for rolling this out. Good on Biden for kind of making good and surpassing the promises of vaccination when he first took office. Now I want to see, and I know there is in the infrastructure and the budget, sort of the annual budget, more money for the CDC. I want to see that. I want to make sure that if this happens again, that we're not going to be missing ventilators in hospitals. And I guess the other thing would be two things. One, a plan for national health, and two, a plan to rapidly reduce climate change and all of the things that lead to these viruses leaping to humans from bats and rats and all the other stuff. So huge questions, but yes, so happy that more people are being vaccinated.
Very much so. Great news. Every once in a while, we give you updates on how the international vaccination effort is going, and obviously not nearly as well as it is in countries like the US and the UK, Israel, and others. Recently, the World Health Organization has estimated that of the more than 700 million coronavirus vaccine doses that have been administered across the globe so far, just 0.2% have gone to people in low-income countries. Inequity that experts warn will persist unless rich countries end their obstruction of an international effort to suspend vaccine patents. Now, this is a disaster for a lot of reasons. And I think that if you're watching this show, probably just morally, it probably enrages you. But pragmatically, there are some issues here as well that we're gonna get into. But first, the director general of the WHO says that there remains a shocking imbalance in the global distribution of vaccines as pharmaceutical companies cling to their monopoly control over technology that was developed with large infusions of public money. I mean, sure, people are dying around the globe, but the important thing is that they make profits. On average, he says, in high-income countries, almost 1 in 4 people have received a vaccine. In low-income countries, it's 1 in more than 500. Let me repeat that. 1 in 4 versus 1 in 500. I mean, we know that there is inequality in virtually every area of life in the economy and society. This is about as bad as I've ever seen the gap between two different countries. As many as 60 countries, including some of the world's poorest, might be stalled at the first shots because nearly all deliveries through the global program intended to help them are blocked until as late as June. So close to 2 more months before the deliveries start. And then eventually they get them. And then eventually they can distribute them and start administering them months from now. And how many deaths from now internationally, Francesca? How many more people will get sick and maimed and die because we got to get it first in a country that has done everything it can to convince people, oh, it's kind of suspicious. Maybe you shouldn't get it anyway.
American exceptionalism right there. If ever your right-wing family members or yourself, you want to complain, you think this country sucks, there you go. We can do literally everything wrong and still be first in line for the vaccine. Yay. And I want everyone to remember that, you know, countries in the global south, it's not just like poor countries that are like super, you know, where people live in huts and like yes, there are those countries which actually have relatively low amounts of COVID, but there are sort of middle income global south countries, whether even Brazil, whether Argentina, whether whether in India, these are countries that have the capacity, were they to get access to the IP, to Johnson & Johnson, to Pfizer, were they able to produce the vaccine on their own? Absolutely can. They have biochemists, they have laboratories, they can do this stuff. And the fact is that Big Pharma will not allow that in the United States, and the Biden administration is absolutely going along with that, which is not okay. For so many reasons. And of course, you know, we have a crisis at the border, even though the Biden administration doesn't want to call it that. If there are going to be, you know, some, you know, tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors, you know, that's not a good thing. How do you think that trying to escape not just climate change, not just gang violence, but a pandemic will affect migration patterns?
Totally.
I'm going to say it's going to increase them by quite a lot. So I just think it's really, it is important to understand going forward that we can't double down on Big Pharma, even though they've saved our asses here. But this is not okay. It's time to actually leverage our power, the money that was given to them, right? The federal funds used to help their R&D. Because the other thing, the last thing I'll say, John, is the reason we have R&D, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but is because Chinese scientists actually released what they understood to be the DNA sequence for COVID, for COVID-19, right? Here you go, this is what we have. And Pfizer and Moderna and J&J were then able to use that to develop their vaccines, I believe. I don't know if the J&J was the exact same. But so they were open about, here, you don't have to sequence this, we have the sequence, go forth. Right, and now we know that like the China vaccine, there's a vaccine developed in China, that's not as effective. They might need more doses than previously thought. The Sputnik vaccine in Russia also not doing so well. AstraZeneca is better, but that's the one that's being administered in Europe. So what I'm saying is that like we just took that IP, we developed the vaccine, and meaning Pfizer and J&J and Moderna, and just not helping the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and it might be easy to think, you know, some people, you know, because everybody, when it comes to like public health, cares most about people like them, might think, okay, but us first, and then, yeah, but is it in then? Yeah, in theory, once we've capped out in a couple months where the people who haven't gotten it don't want to get it, will the factories continue pumping out at the same rate to start shipping it internationally, or will they transition to something else?
Yeah.
I don't know, we'll see. Anyway, I want to jump to the last graphic for the return to the pragmatic point that I want to make. This is from Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, says, what are we going to do if a new and more deadly vaccine-resistant strain develops in Zambia or Burma? I don't want to hear another chorus of who could have known from our intellectuals who missed another huge one. Let's get it right this time, even if it means having to do things a little differently. Our leaders are not forced to take a vow of incompetence. And remember, it's not like the only way you can do any good is to vaccinate every one of these countries exactly as much as we're vaccinating ourselves. Again, remember, the deaths and severe hospitalizations are disproportionately clustered among the elderly. So the first batch, probably through corruption goes to the leaders and the rich or whatever. But then the second batch goes to the elderly. And you can do the most good with a relatively small number of international doses. That's what we need. But if we're going to get it, it's not going to be through the goodwill of the companies. That is never going to happen. It is going to be because Biden makes it happen. And so far, he is not doing that. Donald Trump is still in kind of a bad mood months after losing re-election, and Republicans, as much as behind the scenes they might mock him or worry about what effect he's going to have on their prospects of retaking the Senate, for now they need him on their side. And so they are using very sophisticated tactics to keep him happy. I'm joking, it's not sophisticated. They made up an award for him to make him happy. The National Republican Senatorial Committee presented a new award to former President Trump over the weekend as GOP officials and fundraisers descended on Palm Beach, Florida for a donor retreat. Rick Scott tweeted out, "This weekend I was proud to recognize President Donald Trump with the inaugural NRSC Champion for Freedom Award." It even sounds kind of made up. "President Trump fought for American workers, secured the border, and protected our constitutional rights." So it's just an award for like, it's for everything. That's like the border, workers. What did he do? Did he raise their wages? What did he do? And rights. Which ones? All of them. He did those. And so you get him holding his bowl. That's what he is now.
He upheld the Constitution. Yeah, you're supposed to. You're the president.
Supposed to. Do you give it to every president then?
You're supposed to do that. That's like, it reminds me of the Chris Rock bit where he's like, "I take care of my kids." And you're like, "You're supposed to. That's what you're supposed to do." No, I
mean, what do you want, a cookie?
Up until the point when he sicked a mob on Congress and tried to deny a Democratic election. Up until that point, he was real solid. Oh, that's
those are important rights.
It's a great little cup.
It's a great bowl. He's gonna put, what do you think, candy? I'm saying wrappers. He's gonna put wrappers in that bowl. Wrappers for burgers and stuff like that.
Perfect.
After upholding the rights, there was a message with jelly beans. That's fine. Actually, I would love to have that. Now he upholds this bowl. Twitch. Anyway, yeah. Look, but here's the thing. To continue on the Chris Rock thing, but he does want a cookie. And more importantly, he needs a cookie. And that's almost too good of an analogy, because apparently in 30 Rock, they gave someone a fake cookie award to make them feel better. And that is what he's doing. And the thing is, this is actually not the lowest Trump has gone, because while that award might be like just sort of cynically made up to make him feel better, a participation award, at least it does exist. He's got the bowl. Generally, the awards he gets don't even exist as much as that one. Like, for instance, when he boasted about getting the Bay of Pigs Award, which notably doesn't exist. Or when he kept claiming for years that he was Michigan's Man of the Year, that award doesn't exist and nobody knows what he's referring to. Or when he, for the first time, was on Time Magazine, except that that's made up and Time asked him to take it down because that's not a real one. The dude is so willing to just make up in his mind awards that one's gotta feel realer than anything I've legitimately earned in my entire life.
This is so funny, but also, don't you feel like it was a family member that gave him these awards? Because think about trying to gift something to Donald Trump. He hates everything, he hates you. So you're like, yes, honey, this is the Bay of the Pigs Award. That's Melania, obviously. Here you go. It is a trough full of Diet Coke and cheeseburgers. The Bay of Pigs. Now you eat like the pig king you are. You know, like that's bay. Bay, you are my bay of my pig.
It's now, gotta be tough.
And then it's the Michigan's Man of the Year. Okay, Michigan's Man of the Year. Eric had a whole poster made. It was like, you know, it was Trump's head on like a, you know, some fit body, some bodybuilder, right? And then it was like, hey dad, look, you're Michigan's Man of the Year. That is your body.
Oh my God. Did he? I'm not going to go down a certain road. Yeah, it's. Oh God, it's so sad. It's so sad.
Love me. Hug. Do I get a hug now? No? Okay, cool. I'll just go eat some wrappers in your bowl.
And jelly beans mixed.
And jelly beans.
I just don't live your life this way. Like, you give people awards for, like, there are, you know, there are.
Live your life this way.
No, don't. Like, don't. And I mean, don't live your life that the people around you come away with the belief that this is how they should treat you. Like, there are lifetime achievement awards, there are all sorts of things that are genuine, like, let's look back on all that this person's accomplished. That's not what this is. This is just come on, like the Republican Party. Don't start a third party, please. It would just be devastating to us. So here's a bowl. If we give you a bowl, how about a cup? A mug? A stein? What about a flask? Will you not start a third party if we give you a flask? That's all this is. At the close of last week, Tucker Carlson just did the great replacement theory on his show. This white supremacist idea that the Democrats or Jewish people or I don't know, somebody is bringing in immigrants to replace white people. That was a couple of years ago a crazy, unacceptable thing that you would only find on places like Stormfront or maybe Breitbart. Now, Tucker Carlson said it, and it's kind of news. Like, kind of news that he has openly accepted and is now spreading this white supremacist talking point. And by the way, Holocaust deniers online, like these white supremacist organizers, are giddy about the fact that he did this. Now, I feel like I have to cover this. I am not just mentally ready to listen to him speak. So we're not doing the video. I'm just going to read it. So that's my present to you on this Monday.
Thank you.
He said, now I know that the left and all the little gatekeepers on Twitter become literally hysterical. If that's not what the word literally means. Literally hysterical if you use the term replacement. If you suggest that the Democratic Party is trying to replace the current electorate, the voters now casting ballots with new people. Yeah, what happened with the voters who cast ballots last time? Didn't the Democrats win? Anyway, with more obedient people from the third world, but they become hysterical because that's what's happening actually. Let's just say it, it's true. I mean, everyone wants to make a racial issue out of it. Oh, you know, the white replacement theory? No, no, no. This is a voting right question, as he cares about that. I have less political power because they are importing a brand new electorate. Why should I sit back and take that? The power that I have as an American, guaranteed at birth, is one man, one vote, and they are diluting it. No, they are not allowed to do it. Why are we putting up with this? And notably, I just want to throw this out there. Some people haven't put up with this replacement. So they've gone and shot up synagogues, or for instance, gone to Charlottesville and chanted, Jews will not replace us, or you will not replace us. Some people haven't put up with the immigration. So they go to a Walmart in Texas and they start killing people. So Tucker, there are some people who won't put up with it. But you know that because you're trying to appeal to those people with your insane white supremacist propaganda on a daily basis. So again, we're not going to show you the video, but Francesca, that is what he said.
Yeah, and I think it is important to cover this. I think it really is important to call a white supremacist, to understand what he's doing, to exactly draw those connections that you were drawing between the Christchurch shooter in New Zealand, who echoed this exact same replacement theory BS. But let's talk, because he's couching this in voting rights, right? That's exactly what he's doing. He says, we don't want to import people who will replace us at the ballot box. Let's think about American history when it comes to importing people. Yeah, yes, American history is full of importing people to do free manual labor and then never giving them voting rights. That's the point. And in fact, descendants of those people, slaves, are now still fighting for their right to vote. And the Republican Party and conservatives are still trying to disenfranchise descendants of the slave trade. People who were meant to be imported into the United States, but never given the ability to vote, never given full citizenship. So what the F are we actually talking about here? You know, that's number one. Number two, it's patently false. Number two, undocumented immigrants are not able to vote. That is what is going on. We've got 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country who are not citizens, who've been living in this country for years, who do hard labor, who do labor that all these little scared white Nazis online would never get up at 5 a.m. to go work at a poultry farm or go, you know, go pick tomatoes in a field. Okay, so honestly, until you're willing to do that, maybe then we'll talk about your white supremacist replacement theory. But like, this is, it is all bonkers and it absolutely is just just appealing to the crazies. Just wear the hood, buddy. Put on the hood and do your show. And my last point is, anyone who goes on Tucker Carlson or anyone who watches the people who go on Tucker Carlson, Glenn Greenwald, Jimmy Dore, it's the same thing. You are condoning white supremacist ideology. So you're not a leftist, you're not a progressive, you're not a firebrand, you're not an independent thinker, you are a white supremacist apologist.
And Tucker has, that is his mission. He'll occasionally talk about other stories, but it is trying to do what this story is, normalize what used to be unacceptable white supremacist and white nationalist talking points, but they are now very acceptable on the right. And because Tucker Carlson has this aura of being reasonable, he has magazine articles written about him and stuff like that. He has a big audience. So if he says it, it must be acceptable. But no, it is the crazy stuff from 4chan and Stormfront and all of that. And I totally agree, have the balls to wear the hood at the very least. Like,
yeah.
be the Nazi that you wanna be. Stop hiding it, you little, I'll say baby. But yeah, but he won't. He has to hide it. Maybe that's a good sign. Maybe that's a sign that Fox isn't ready to have an explicit, just to have swastikas on his desk. Maybe that is still a bridge too far. We'll see in 4 years if it still is. I just wanna finally add, if you don't get the why this motivates people to deadly violence, it's because of what's sort of just lurking in the background of it. Because it is replacement that he's talking about. But that isn't what they're actually describing after all. I have a desk. If I get another desk, even an illegal desk, I haven't replaced my desk, I just have more desks. When you replace something, you get rid of the other one. The other one's gone. Now you have this instead of that. He never actually describes how white people are being replaced, but you are supposed to believe that you are being wiped out. It's consistent across all of their stuff. You're being canceled. Like, you're gone now. You're done. There's nothing for you. That's not true. Nothing, even in the crazy stories they talk about, actually say that. But that is what they will always make their followers believe, that they're about to be wiped out. That, as they said during the BLM marches, there's gonna be black mobs marching through the streets with guns coming for them. They're always supposed to be terrified that they're about to be wiped out, even as they continue to have outsized political power.
Yes, that being said, if someone offered to swap Tucker Carlson for a taco truck, I'm so there.
Like, watch a bit of it.
Just swap it out. I mean, look, you want us to go there? Let's do it. I say deport Tucker Carlson. That's right. Hashtag deport Tucker Carlson. We don't need you. We don't want you. And no, we won't be sending our best elsewhere, but just go, just leave.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where you'd send him. I'm assuming based on his skin tone and whole thing, the country from Frozen, I guess. I don't know where it's from, but
yeah, I mean the Epstein anyway. Island or the Fire Festival, sure. Forever. You know, I don't know, one of them islands.
You can hang out with Matt Gaetz. Apparently they have dinner already, even if he doesn't remember it. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the weekly top 10 list with me and Francesca Fiorentini. How's it going, Francesca?
Hi.
I have a dog in the room. I'm gonna be taking care of little Carl for a bit. So God only knows what he's up to. I can't see him, that scares me. But what we do have is a top 10 list. So thank you to everybody for being tier 2 and tier 3 members on YouTube and having access to this. This week, it is a political one that was inspired by John Oliver's show on Sunday. We're gonna be talking about 10 things that Biden hasn't done that he really, really should and really, really could do, basically without needing any of the other stuff that's causing so many problems out there. The Joe Manchins, the Chris Sinemas, Mitch McConnell, whatever. So Francesca, where are you starting at on this one?
Oh God, so this one requires a little more research.
I try not to do that often, but occasionally, yeah.
Very difficult. Okay, number five. I think, and they've not signaled that they are gonna do this, but I really think that the US should move the embassy, the American embassy, out of Jerusalem, where Trump put it into. Yeah, no, but this is something that is so simple. It is symbolic. Yes, it would be a symbolic move back, but it would also say to Bibi Netanyahu and the right in Israel that, like, Jerusalem is contested, that it is shared, and that, yeah, we're gonna move it back to what, Tel Aviv, wherever the hell it was before. But like, it's too volatile to put the U.S. embassy there. So yeah,
he's never gonna.
He's not going to. Exactly, but it's something that would be super easy. Once they did it, it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's somehow. They kept saying they were going to, but then didn't, because that would be too. But now that it's done, he's not going to do it. That's a great inclusion, though.
It's kind of like settlements, you know. Once they're done in Israel, they just kind of stay.
It's almost like that's the point. Yeah. Okay, my number five. So, my top four are for me and the world. Number five is for someone else. It's for Senator John Cornyn. So why hasn't Biden tweeted crazy shit? Seriously, John Cornyn was tweeting about how this president, it's all like his PR is all about not damaging himself. So all of his tweets are really predictable. I get it. Look, that's stupid. But even for us, maybe, like, it would be like, maybe he could spice it up a little bit, make things a little bit more interesting. You know, people are a little bit less interested in politics following the election. They're all burned out. Maybe Biden could say something crazy. He could do that. He's got a phone. He probably knows how to use it. I think he could say something crazy. That would be nice.
He did say something like, the poor are getting like screwed or something like that. He had a really old timey phrase. They're getting fleeced. Yeah. He said the poor are being fleeced. That was good.
That's an old timey one. Yeah. Yeah, we haven't had that many old timey phrases from him. That would spice things up. Okay, what's your number four?
God, I think, okay, so I'm trying to look and see, because he's making some moves on some things. But it's something we talked about on the main show. I think there is absolutely no, I don't think it's defensible for a Democrat to continue to uphold big pharma patents on a COVID vaccine. And I absolutely think that part of his, we want to rejoin the world, you know, we believe in internationalism and cooperation and blah, 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 put pressure on these big pharma companies to release a generic version or release the IP of the COVID vaccine. That's it. That's it. Yep. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're showing that you cannot work actually globally around something like climate change if you can't address this pandemic in an international way. That is the antithesis of Trump. And so I would say do it. So I'm surprised that he has not done that yet.
Yeah, that is exactly my number four. specifically making the actual patent available internationally for every country to begin producing. And he is not going to have an opportunity internationally to do something as simply that will do as much good for the world, that will generate as much goodwill for the world. He can do it to, you know, countries that, you know, we have good relations with. He can do it to neutral countries. He can send better ones, Russia, like he could send those, like he could do this stuff. Right. It would be relatively easy, except that it would piss off some of their donors, I guess, but it's totally necessary. It would save so many lives. He should 100% do it. And it's not yet looking like that's likely to happen.
And the last thing you exactly put your finger on it. It's a flex, right? Like, you know, the United States is not used to not using anything but military power when it comes to international stuff. But like to say, no, here you go, here's the vaccine. Like it's a flex. There's a reason that Russia is sending like a very symbolic amount of their not that great vaccine to countries all over the world. It's because it's their version of soft power. It's their version of being like, well, we're a superpower. So if the United States wants to do that, I think they should do that. I mean, it's a perfect flex against your supposed, not adversaries, but competitors.
Sure, definitely. What's your number three?
Okay, number three, it's gonna get harder as we go, but you got an exploratory committee. Just do it. Just abolish student debt. Drop it, abolish it. Stop
you
exploring.
Were talking about him running for re-election with the exploratory committee. Oh, okay.
Just don't run. No, I'm surprised he hasn't started his campaign yet. No, I'm surprised he hasn't stopped student debt, like abolish, eliminated at least 50,000. Personally, I think anything less than 50,000 is weak sauce. I think 50,000 should be the starting point, but I think he could also just do the whole kit and caboodle. Once again, we've talked about this on the show before. The way to be untouchable in the minds of millennials and Gen, whatever the hell TikTok is. And like that is the way that he ensures another term. He will create so much goodwill and it will also be a huge boost to the economy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. My number three is going to be another international one, and that is that he should follow up some of the stuff he did to stop assisting the offensive operations of Saudi Arabia against Yemen and to actually pressure Saudi Arabia to stop the entire thing, and specifically to stop the mid-pandemic blockade that is producing so much additional death not directly tied to military weapons. We have influence over Saudi Arabia. We should 100% be using it. It would be the moral thing to do, but it's also now politically easier to do because more and more voters on both sides don't get our like clingy relationship with Saudi Arabia. Like you could do that. You might even get some credit from some Republicans for doing that. And you would make good on some of the claims you've made about being anti-war during the primary. So he should 100% speak out against that and start putting pressure on them publicly. And so far, it hasn't really seen it done, specifically not about the blockade anyway.
Totally.
Okay, what's your number two?
Two similar to that, but with Latin America. Look, part of Obama's legacy, if he's trying to make good on the Obama legacy, was easing travel restrictions between Cuba and the United States. I think that Biden should absolutely go back to that. It was a victory for the Obama administration. I believe he was even part of those negotiations. So dropping that, the travel restrictions, is so important. And then similarly in Venezuela, get off the coup train, buddy. Just stop it. You know, Anthony Blinken is continuing very similar language that Mike Pompeo had when it comes to Cuba and like being very concerned about democracy and blah, 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 blah. And like, I had a talk with Guaido. Who's Guaido? I don't know. He called himself the president. So just stop with the coup stuff in Venezuela. Stop trying to overturn Nicolas Maduro. Like if you want to work to put pressure, work with other countries around it. Like again, in terms of like sanctions and blockade, that does nothing but punish the, you know, sort of, it doesn't punish Nicolas Maduro, just like blockading and sanctions against North Korea. Don't, you know, don't punish Kim Jong-un. They're all sitting pretty, they're eating, it's fine. It punishes the poorest, it punishes the people who don't have access, punishes like the not wealthy. So Venezuela and Cuba, easy once again to reverse course.
I agree, that's a good one too. Great international ones from Francesca today. My number two will be international as well. And it was actually the stimulus for this top 10 list. That was John Oliver's segment updating us on what hasn't been done to actually allow more refugees into the United States. So Biden has said for a long time, he's going to raise those numbers. We told you about how abysmal Trump's numbers were, how they got lower and lower every year. And he announced early on after inauguration that he was raising it. Raise it like by five times. And then he hasn't actually done it because the announcement isn't the thing that actually does it. He has to sign something that actually does it. And he hasn't done it. Why? Nobody knows. Jen Psaki won't explain. He won't explain. They just haven't done it. And it is having devastating consequences for those who in theory could have already come in but haven't. Anyway, if you want more info on that, definitely watch Last Week Tonight. It's the beginning segment is about refugees. It was a great segment. And it's one of the things where mine are mostly trying to focus on things that he could himself do today if he wanted to. And so if he's not, we should be asking why. And I think this is a great one for that.
Was that the same, is that the same topic as using the pandemic to deport people as well?
Or it's, I mean, it's in theory, they should be lumped together.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
What's your number one?
Continuing to do that. Number one,
yeah, that's
perhaps
true,
that's most important, really. Where is the White House cat? I was promised a cat.
There was one, but Major Biden ate it.
Big deal made of this White House cat that's apparently coming. Meanwhile, Major and what's the other one's name? Colonel?
Champ.
Major and Champ Biden
General.
Yeah, they're biting left and right, which is fine. Look, I don't blame them. I would absolutely try and bite a Secret Service agent if I was moved into the White House. But I do need to see a cat. I need to see it soon. And I hope it's a tuxedo cat because they are the best. And I hope it's chubby and fat. And I want to follow its Instagram. And I want to toss it a baguette and have it catch it in its little paws.
Have you seen a cat catch a baguette in its paws? Oh, I gotta see this now. I didn't know this was a thing. That's my favorite new genre. Have they said that they're getting a cat?
They've said they're getting a cat. I think there is no update as of now on when that is happening.
I can't believe they would tease us in that way. They're acting like cats, actually. ironically. I would worry about the cat with Major around, but that would be cool to have more pets. So I hope that we get that. I just hope that we don't have one briefly. Imagine if Major killed the White House cat. Like Biden's giving a speech and you see in the background Major walking with like the hanging body. God, that'd be devastating. Okay, equally serious, my number one. Many people have probably been waiting for this, and it was your number three, I believe. Cancel the student loan debt, you a-hole. You could do it right now. You should do it right now. It is a pandemic. We have been holding off on interest and repayment for federally backed loans, but that's going to end. And then people who've been out of work for a long time are going to be devastated. So just cancel it. Stop putting it off. You could easily do it. There is nothing you could do that would be a more immediate stimulus to the economy than canceling student loan debt.
Yes.
And also, like, if you didn't care about any of that, as Francesca points out, think about the goodwill that that would generate with the voters. Like, if you actually wanted to get voters to like you, there's nothing you could do immediately that would be as successful as that. And he could do it today if he wanted to. I don't think he's gonna do 50,000. I don't care what exploratory committee gets. He supposedly has an exploratory committee for expanding the Supreme Court. Sure. But he could do 10, or he could do 20, or he could do 30, or whatever. And that wouldn't be everything for a lot of people. A lot of people would still be drowning in debt, but it would be that much better. And it's not just the sheer amount. It's at that amount then wouldn't be generating interest that makes it like these are insurmountable tasks for many people because of how high it is. So he should 100% be doing that. It is highly suspicious that he has not. Okay, everybody. Francesca, thank you as always. Yours was good. I'm going to be looking out for that cat now.
I know. I want to see
it. Yeah, he could call it like corn pop or whatever, like do a little throwback to the election. Oh my God,
it should so be called corn pop.
The tuxedo chitty.
First of all, thank you for the shout out. But I just back to your first thing about not tweeting more. Like, I do think that little things like that, little like throw us a bone or a cat, you know, throws a cat bone, you know, yeah, like make it, that's like a self-effacing, like I get the corn pop was a funny rant and it was silly and I probably went on for too long. Now my cat's name is corn pop. Once again, Gen Z will absolutely love you for that.
Yeah, you could do that as a throwback that Gen Z would love. You could name it laptop and then the right wing would just lose their minds about Hunter Biden. Anyway, you could have some fun with it, Biden.
Or just name it Giuliani. That'd be so good to name it Giuliani.
That would be great. Anyway, Francesca, thank you. Thank you to everybody watching this for supporting the network and giving us the opportunity to do this special content for you. Feel free to post below if you have requests. I have a couple of ideas, but I'm always down to hear more top 10 requests. So feel free to post those below and we'll see you in the next one. Since we began the Damage Report, one of my favorite parts of doing this show is that I've been able to meet and hopefully talk to and then introduce to you candidates from around the country. And over the past few years, we have talked to literally hundreds of candidates, many of them first-time candidates running in both primary and general elections. You know, so many great candidates, especially those endorsed by the Justice Democrats. We're very lucky to speak with now Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez during her primary. And so I am thrilled to begin that process for the next cycle as well. As we speak with the first endorsement from the Justice Democrats in the 2022 cycle, running in Tennessee's 5th District, Odessa Kelly, welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
We're very glad to have you here as well. And so, you know, hoping to speak with you as this race goes on, and there is a bit of time. Your primary is in August 4th of next year, which is late, and there are side effects of that, but it does mean that you have more time during that primary election. So if you could introduce yourselves to our audience, we'd love to know more about you.
Of course. Hey, my name is Odessa Kelly. I am a native from Nashville, Tennessee, which is a rarity. And Nashville these days is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. I came from a working class background and community. And I went through public school my entire life, played basketball at Tennessee State University, graduated from Tennessee State University, and got a job working for the city. You know, I worked for Metro Parks and Recreation for almost 14 years of my life. And that work is what led me into becoming the executive director of Stand Up Nashville and doing activism work. You know, every day I was in a community where people were always had their backs against the walls, you know, living check to check, trying to figure out how they were gonna make it to the next moment, and understand that they had these barriers that were in front of them that, you know, they didn't place there, that we as a society had placed in front of them, you know. And then doing that work, doing Stand Up Nashville, that pushed me to this moment, you know, where I was like, I can't sit around any moment and watch democracy happen when I have every right to be a part of it, just like you do.
Exactly. And you are running in a primary. So there is a current representative, Jim Cooper, a conservative Democrat. So tell me about the decision not only to run, but to run in a primary against this particular Democrat. What made you want to do that?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the, you know, this past year was eye opening. I think 2020 showed us not just who we are around the pandemic and around racial tensions, but how we don't respond to crises well, and how we have been putting, you know, fiscal notes and pocketbooks in front of humanitarian needs. And I just didn't want to let that happen anymore. People need to be centered in the middle of the process, and people also want to have leadership that I'm inspired by and leadership that I can trust. I'm tired of having leadership that's always the, how do you say it, the last person to do the right thing. And I'm running for my own life. You know, I have family members who definitely need Medicare for all and need Social Security, something that, you know, Congressman Cooper's always trying to cut.
And so some of the big, you know, topics that dominated political talk last year during the election, we had the pandemic. Obviously, there was the massive social movement around Black Lives Matter and criminal justice. Jim Cooper, what was his leadership like for those crises last year?
I don't know, and that's the problem. You know, as an organizer, I can tell you about what we did. You know, I can tell you about how I was affected by it as a Black woman, as a mother of a Black son. I think today, we just had another individual that was shot and killed. I don't know what we can say. I marched, I protested, you know, we've organized around these things, yet it still keeps happening, you know. And we need to have congressional leadership that has a shared perspective at the top that knows the urgency of these needs.
Okay. And I know you have an ad out and you talk about quite a few high profile issues. What are you hoping to make this campaign sort of center around? What particular issues are you gonna be focusing on?
Well, the top two things that I want to focus on if I get elected is Medicare for all and Green New Deal with union jobs. And the reason why that's important for me is because, again, being an African-American, a person that's usually living check to check, I never have the time to think or give my two cents about the earth, but the earth is important to me. So voting for the Green New Deal does two things. It gives me a chance to help clean up the earth and do my fair share. And also it helps build pathways out of poverty for communities that usually don't have those, you know. And Medicare for All is, I mean, after this past year, I think we had over 500,000 deaths, you know, and a lot of those could have been avoided. So those would be the biggest two things. Another thing too is I want people to be able to see themselves and hear themselves, you know, when they have someone in the congressional leadership that's speaking on their behalf. And then that's who I am. I'm someone that has a shared perspective of people who are on the ground every day just trying to make it.
Okay. You know, so whenever I have a candidate on, I do research about them, and I saw an article about you from Fox News attempting to, you know, very early get out and define you as being pro political violence because of some comments, including a reference to you wanting to smack the blank out of, I believe it was Ted Cruz, which is less incendiary than many of the things I say about Ted Cruz on a normal week. What do you think about that? Obviously, political violence is a big topic in America over the past 6 months or so for obvious reasons. How do you respond to that sort of criticism coming from Fox News?
I think it's rich, you know. I think it's a lesson to really be careful with the words that you say. But to clear the air, you know, I think it was right after Trayvon Martin had died. I went to an event that was people that was impacted by his murder, you know. And at that event, you know, all of a sudden these people just started marching in with some bow ties, and I looked up and it was Farrakhan there. So this is a person I only usually see on TV. So I just tweeted out like, Farrakhan is here, you know.
Mm-hmm. That was considered very inflammatory.
Yeah.
You stated a fact. Yes. Yeah. You know, so I also want to make sure, I know that we're very early on this process. Normally when we talk to candidates, we ask, you know, sort of how they want potential viewers who might want to help them out to help them out. But I have to admit at this point, with the pandemic still existing, I don't know what campaigning is like. I know what it was like last year. So at this stage, what is your campaign looking for? How can people in your district possibly help out?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I mean, it's very simple, you know, volunteering and money, you know, is the two things that we definitely need at this point. The reason why we started so early is because I'm not independently wealthy. You know, there's a redistricting issue that can happen here, and we won't find out until late January of next year whether that happens or not. And, you know, no, I don't have the funds to just jump in at that time. And we wanted to run a serious race for the people here who need help. You know, go to OdessaForCongress.com, go to any of the social media platforms, and whatever you can give, we appreciate it. Even if it's telling your friend, your mama, or your rich friend, you know, like give Odessa some money. You know, what we don't want to be is one of those campaigns, like the wealth gap is a real thing. A lot of people come in at the end of campaigns and give money, but by that time, the other candidate has a 9-10 month start. So, you know, we're really trying to reach that goal right here in this moment so that you can hear my voice. You know, this is a campaign I hope that all of you out there are proud of, because it's me telling a story and using this platform to tell the story of real, everyday, hardworking people.
Okay. Odessa Kelly running in the 5th District of Tennessee. Appreciate you joining us on the show today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.